Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Compliance Week News Podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we are going to talk about reforming the world of credit rating agencies. The big three rating agencies, which are Fitch, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's, they have fallen under some pretty fierce criticism in the last 18 months for their role in the financial crisis. Cynics out there say that at best, these three agencies totally failed at their job of rating bond and securities issues in the 2000s, giving high marks to issuances that probably should have been flunked. At worst, these critics say the agencies were riddled with conflicts of interest and basically rubber-stamped bond issues simply to generate revenue from the issuers who were paying the rating agencies in the first place. Now, Congress and the SEC have been debating various ideas on how to reform the rating agency's business. So joining us today to talk about what might happen and what should happen is James Gellert. He is CEO of Rapid Ratings, which is one of the independent agencies out there who bills the users of these ratings data rather than the issuers of the bond issues. So, James, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Matt. Happy to be here.
So I guess my first question is, how much of the criticism we are hearing about the big three in particular or about ratings agencies in general, how much of that is valid and worth discussion?
Well, I think a lot of it is valid and warranted. The big three agencies really did chase deal flow and market share and profits during the last handful of years, but they've always been extremely profitable businesses and have been a real a fundamental part of the capital markets, but they probably expanded a bit too fast and furiously into asset classes that are very difficult to rate and that you know, justifiably they probably couldn't consistently and accurately rate them. A lot of these are the structured products that we've heard a lot about, the collateralized mortgage obligations and so on and so forth. And these have been these grew in issuance as Wall Street continued to promote them and move risk around the street. And the agencies chased after a lot of that business, and they did so, unfortunately, at the peril of a lot of us. But they weren't alone. The agencies are part of a symbiotic system that includes the investment banks, institutional investors, and inadvertently even the regulatory and the legislative regime that that governs the rating agencies that in many ways hindered competition and promoted the big three's oligopoly, if you will, and their ability to really have a stranglehold on providing ratings in the structured products arena.
So, I mean, do you think that it really was outright conflicts of interest and people turning a blind eye to it versus simply dabbling with complex products you didn't really understand?
Well, I think it's probably a mix. A lot is made of the conflicts of interest. A lot is made of the conflict of interest of being paid by issuers and having the investment banks and the issuers of structured products paying the big three rating agencies for their analysis. I don't know that ultimately that is really the biggest problem. I think there are a lot of conflicts in the traditional rating agency process. Mm-hmm. There's a bias to brand. There's a bias to size of issuer. There's an emphasis on what they would call stability or rating through the cycle as opposed to constant accuracy of ratings. And this isn't just talking about the structured products. This is talking about straight vanilla corporate bonds as well. Mm-hmm. But I think the ratings shopping element of the conflict is one that definitely got out of hand. And basically what that is the ability for an issuer to or their banker to approach one of the big three rating agencies, work with them on how a structured product should be structured, what type of collateral should be underlying it to get the best possible rating, and then doing that two or three times to figure out which of the agencies they could get the best rating from. That concept, that term rating shopping, is definitely the most egregious behavior that came out of that that whole period.
So now let's talk about this idea of shifting the revenue model for the agencies to one where the user of the data pays for it. I know that is what you guys do, but there are a lot of people who would say that on a larger scale, that sort of model really won't work very easily. The institutional investors are probably doing their own investigation anyways and don't particularly care about what, you know, they're not going to pay for a rating agency to give them the data. Smaller investors might not, you know, want to participate in that. I'm wondering if, I mean, is it really a viable business model on a larger scale?
Well, I think it is a viable business model. We have investors who pay us for our product. I think everyone would rather not pay if they don't have to, but
sure,
if they are getting value, then they will. And but just to clarify, I don't really think this is a matter, or rather the reform in the ratings business is a matter of outlawing the issuer pay business model. I think it's really a function of creating alternatives and being able to create a broad enough playing field where there are alternative sources of information and analytics that investors can choose from. If they choose to use what's free, they may get what they're paying for, or they may get something that's valuable. But ultimately, and particularly in this environment, we're seeing investors who are or anyone, corporations doing counterparty risk management, anyone who is just relying on old sources of information or few sources of information are under a lot of internal scrutiny from compliance officers, from risk officers, and from CFOs, who are saying you must know who you're doing business with or who you're investing in better than you ever have before, and you need to have alternative sources of information. And I don't think this is a fad. I don't think it's a short-term trend. I think this is a wholesale change in the way people are looking at how they manage risk and how they invest.
So now, last question. When you're looking at what is going on in Washington and the various reform ideas floating around out there, what in particular are you keeping an eye on, either in Congress or the SEC, or what do you think might be the most impactful reform that we might get to see sometime soon?
Well, I think the reform that promotes the greatest amount of competition is what will be most effective. So far, you've seen the combination of those elements, both legislative and regulatory, addressing or attempting to address conflicts, transparency, liability, oversight, those types of things. And I've had the opportunity to testify to the Senate, to the House, and to the SEC, and be involved in a lot of these discussions. And it's interesting to watch the evolution of them. I think one of the areas where they're probably drifting in the wrong direction is focusing too much on liability and making the rating agencies liable for their product and for their ratings. I don't think there's anything wrong with liability if there's gross misconduct and so forth. But what's happening is liability is becoming the political stick to the reform effort, and in many cases, it's actually becoming the primary part of reform. And liability has never really been a disincentive to the Wall Street animals in general. So that's everyone in finance. Really what needs to happen is there needs to be more competition. There needs to be the conflicts or the more egregious behavior within the conflicts be curbed. And we need to not have any inadvertent consequences to the reform effort. And one of the things that's happening, if you look at elements of the efforts across all of these different parties, the Senate, House, and SEC, is you're seeing elements being put in place that are actually easier for the big three to afford, because it's really a matter of adding, it may be adding compliance officers, it may be adding external or internal counsel and processes, but the biggest players can afford that the easiest. And the players who would rather choose not to become a nationally recognized statistical rating organization, an NRSRO, like we have chosen not to at this stage, it's because there are too many costs and too many uncertainties about being one. And that ultimately hurts everyone, because it reduces the number of competitors within the NRSRO framework, and it has more of us competing from outside that framework.
So,
but there are a lot of interesting things that are happening in the compliance aspects of the reform effort, making sure that compliance officers at the agencies are not involved in setting fees or in the ratings process at all, new reports signed and attested by compliance officers delivered to the SEC annually, explaining internal policies and procedures and how they're being followed and any problems that are being identified. And I think these things are valuable because they are getting to transparency, and ultimately transparency will help in people's confidence in the rating agencies, but it doesn't really change the actual ratings product or make the analytics any better in what particularly the big three are producing.
All right. Well, James, that is all the time we have today, but you gave us plenty to think about and covered a lot of ground for us, so we really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Matt.
And again, everybody, that was James Gellert, who is CEO of Rapid Ratings, and he was talking with us about credit rating agencies and the possible reforms to them that might come along in the wake of the financial crisis. That is all for this week's podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you join us again next time.